Hello, I'm Rob Willis, and together with Graeme Searle, we're going to open up a cupboard full of traditional cures and remedies, some you might know or even use yourself. Welcome to another Yarns of Oz podcast. Were you ever subjected to a certain mentholated chest rub when you were a child? I know I was. It was supposed to be very good for you, and even on the soles of the feet, I believe. I know in our family, even my kids are still using it, so it's been around for a while, Graeme.
It has, yeah. Possibly because it smells so bad, and if it smells bad, it must be good for you, is the folk wisdom, I think. But yeah, it's still around, and we've used it in our family too, and plenty of others do.
You would have a few examples that you've collected over the years, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, going back a few years, of course, families were often too poor to go to doctors at all, if there was one to go to. So it had to be the family that came up with whatever was needed to fix the coughs and the colds, the cuts and the bruises, and draw the boils. And it was usually mum or grandmother. And the other thing they always had, of course, was castor and cod liver oil, which was a pretty awful concoction. And if that didn't cure you, well, nothing would, that's for sure.
I can remember as a kid, I'd be staying with my grandmother down on the lakes of down on the banks of Lake Illawarra, and there was always a blue bag, the blue bag that was used in the washing for stings. It was applied to any jellyfish stings or anything like that.
That's right. Yeah, I can remember a time when you didn't go to the beach with that blue bag in your kit, and you certainly used it in the bush all the time. Ant stings, spider bites, as you said, jellyfish, anything that that stung you, and you got out that blue bag and you just wet it and rubbed it on, and hey presto.
I wonder how many of the younger generation these days would even know what a blue bag was.
That's right, yeah. I don't even know if you get them anymore, can you?
I don't think so. No. What about warts? I remember John Meredith, who was a great collector of folklore. He would always buy a wart from someone. He'd give them a couple of bob and
yeah,
buy
that
the wart.
Very generous of him.
Yeah.
I'm probably not going to buy anyone's warts, but it certainly is a strong folk belief that you can get rid of warts by selling them if you can find someone silly enough to buy them. So John was extremely generous to do that, I think. And it's a good example, I guess, of that other aspect of folk medicine, which is not just practical, but also magical. Obviously, a wart won't go away if you sell it to someone, even if you believe it will. There are all kinds of other ones, of course, about warts. If you have a wart and you rub a piece of meat on it, and you bury that piece of meat in the ground, as the meat rots away, so the wart will disappear from your hand or wherever it is. And that's another one of those stories that goes around in that side of it.
Seems to be very superstitious with warts, I've seen, and that there's always this mythology that if you either buy them or bury something or do something else, that they will magically disappear.
Yeah, that's right. It's a sympathetic magic, it's usually called. And yeah, if you do something the right way and then something else happens, then one will affect the other. Whether it works or not, I don't know. I've never actually tried it. But it's one, a bit like tying a red cloth around your neck for a sore throat. There's another bit of kind of magic belief there.
One I've got from local, as far as warts, was the juice out of a milk thistle, or the milk out of a milk thistle, if you put that on it.
Ah, yeah, that's right. That reminds me. I've heard that one, yeah, out of a dandelion thistle or
yes,
something.
Yes,
yes. That was another one, yeah, that's right.
Over the years, we've recorded a few of these home remedies and mixtures for the National Library. It's a very important part of our National Library collection, actually, the folkloric collections of myths and legends, and of course, bush medicines come into this. Here's a bit of a compilation that I've put together of some of the people that I've spoken with over the years, and you'll notice that the good old castor oil gets a good mention. Did Mum have any home remedies? Say, if you had coughs and colds and things like that, what would she give you?
Yes, some home remedies. I'll tell you one she gave us. There was nine of us in family, I told you. And every Friday night, it's true of the city, every Friday night, they'd all get in line when we had to have a tablespoonful of castor oil every Friday night, but there was no one sick. But we had to have that cursed castor oil.
That's what kept you healthy.
Every Friday night. That's true. And I tell you, it never done us any harm.
What about the dreaded cod liver oil and the cast? Castor oil for you, eh?
Yeah, I hated that. I hated it. But every Saturday, we used to have medicine, bowel medicine, because senator, dates and senatee. And they used to make it up into little balls and used to have that little dates and senatee.
Pardon my laughter, but I know it probably wasn't funny at the time.
It wasn't funny. No, and I think that's what kept us so healthy.
That's the thing. That's what kept us so healthy. I reckon the dates and senatee would go straight through you.
Oh, completely. I would think so. And it's rolled up into little balls.
Yeah. But that seemed to be one of the things, didn't it? You know, you had to be cleaned out.
It had to be cleaned out, and it also had to be awful. You know, the awfuler the better. It makes it better, quicker, and more effectively.
I wonder if people still continue with the home remedies to any degree these days. I'd be interested in finding out, and if people would like to contact us, we'd love that. I know there's some probably that we use in our family, and I bet you have some too.
Yeah, I don't know if people use them so much today, but it's a bit like superstitions. You talk to people about superstitions and they say, oh, no, I'm not superstitious at all. But you sort of dig a little deeper and they reel out superstition after superstition. So even if they don't practice the superstition, they know it. It might be the same with some of these sorts of things as well, I think, that even though they might not use it, that kind of folk memory of what was done to them possibly in childhood or passed down to them even by their grandparents maybe in stories still sticks in people's minds.
Yeah, it's still retained there. There were some pretty horrific injuries in the bush, and of course isolation meant that medical attention wasn't just around the corner. You couldn't go to the doctor. Well, we talked about financial reasons as well before. Kerosene was a popular choice, and what about the good old bush nurses of the era? I've spoken with a couple of bush nurses who were trying to sew up a bushie's foot. But it was so tough that the needles kept breaking. It was just making do medicine. Shearers just stitching themselves up after an injury with the shears, and dabbing a bit of kerosene on it. Here's a grab from Western Australia, from Bert and Mrs. Bisbee, and they talking about the use of kerosene, which will come across quite a bit. Did Mum have any home remedies, like any bush remedies? Kerosene, yeah, okay.
Kerosene was if you cut yourself on a rusty corrugated iron or a nail or stood on a nail, a rusty nail went into your foot, kerosene was the thing. The first thing you used was kerosene.
Coals.
What about your cobwebs?
Cobwebs is, if you, one chap was sharpening the shaft, got a blade, and his hand slipped and got a deep gash in his finger. Well, round in the sheds, there were type of, not quite like the spider web now, seemed to be a big heap of spider webs. And you used to go and get that and put that out, and that used to
bind
to sort of stop the bleeding when it was bandaged up.
Have you come across the cobwebs anywhere, Graham?
Yeah, I've heard of cobwebs being used, and I think that, in fact, they've actually been proven to work medically, you know, by proper doctors. In recent, they do use them, I think, in one way or another. Or at least I saw something on the internet about it, which suggested that they did. But so that's that kind of practical medicine, I think. And as well as that, of course, as we said earlier about warts, there's also this kind of magical side to things as well. In Britain, there used to be, and probably still are, people known as cunning men or cunning women who were able to be the local doctor for people who couldn't get to medical attention for one reason or another. They were often sometimes known as white witches, is a term that's sometimes used, or that's a bit elaborate for what the kind of things they did, but they were very skilled and knowledgeable in herbal remedies and so forth. We didn't think any of these people kind of made it to Australia, but we now know after the discovery of an old almanac in Tasmania that indeed such people did operate here. And in the almanac, the person who owned it, who was a man called William Allison, had written down all of his recipes and his cures for the various things that he'd been told he could use. One of them was a cure for inward piles, and this was to take a handful of marshmallows. And the marshmallow plant, if you don't know, as I didn't until I looked it up, is also known as the white mallow herb. It's quite an ancient psychotropic healing herb. And what Allison did with it, William Allison did with it, was, or told his people to do with it, was to boil it up and then just to take it in tea before you went to bed. But he also had another recipe for the curing of outward or blind piles, which sounds not good. And his cure for this was to take hog's lard and rub it between two pieces of lead, and then you rub the ointment onto the parts affected. So again, this is that sort of combination of the practical and the magical that is characteristic, I think, of folk medicine.
Yeah.
And there's a note underneath the underneath the entry where he talks about this, and it says proved. So in other words, he's obviously used it somewhere or other, possibly on himself.
I've come across one from up on the Nulla, slim dusty territory, about piles or hemorrhoids too. And don't try this one at home, kiddies. Bluestone copper sulfate, right? Yeah, you get a bucket, a tin bucket, of course, and boil the water, put the bluestone in it, the copper sulfate in it, and steam the piles. You squat over the bucket. So it wasn't a white witch or anything like that, but the people up there gave me a knowing nod that it did work. So there's other examples of these knowing people, these people with the knowledge, if you wish, Graham.
Not so many. Again, they're very hard to track down because by nature of it, it's a relatively secret sort of practice. And these days in particular, and increasingly since the 19th century, as medicine became more professionalised, these people were looked down upon. And so they tended to keep things to themselves. But if you look in the right places, you can certainly find people who do practice these kind of traditions now. Perhaps not so much in communities, because most places hopefully now have access to proper medicine, but certainly New Age people, people in pagan beliefs and so forth, or people just interested in herbalism of one kind or another. You can easily find it all on the internet if you're interested.
It's interesting, I think, that some of these old remedies, which are herbal remedies in their way, using, were passed on from the Indigenous, from First Nation people too, that I know that some of the early settlers grabbed, that they actually have been proven in latter years to be beneficial. They would chew the bark of the willow, I think it was, which contained, might be aspirin, yes.
Right.
So there's these things that have, my mother was a great believer in cod liver oil for rheumatism. I think there's been benefits noted for that as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of research going on at the moment, or over recent years anyway, into a lot of these traditional remedies, whether they're from Aboriginal sources or from British tradition or European tradition. And they do occasionally find that, in fact, there is some truth behind them.
The late Marie Snow of Forbes was someone who listened to her grandmother, we so often don't listen to our grandparents, but Marie did. And you were talking about someone, this woman who had the knowledge, the bush knowledge, and her grandmother was, and she had a reputation as a bush doctor. Here's Marie talking about some of the remedies that she learnt from grandma.
So this was your
dad's mother. Yes. We absolutely idolised her. She was just so good to us.
Did she ever mention any of the old bush remedies that she used?
Oh, yes, the old kerosene on the sugar and these sort of things, yep. Yes. Yep. Punch holes in your lungs, mind you, but that was for a cold, or you couldn't get your breath and these sort of things. Or if you had a very heavy cold, they'd put 6 spots of kerosene on a teaspoon of sugar. What else was... the tea leaves put into a tea towel or a cloth and put around your neck when the throat was sore or your tonsils were enlarged. She'd paint your throat with iodine at the drop of a hat with a chook feather. Was terrible.
With a chook feather?
With a chook feather.
Mm. Well, you know how to treat the grandkids next time, don't you?
Yes, my eyes are watering after that one. Yeah, iodine on Chook feather run throat, yeah. No, thanks.
Yeah, you say if it tasted nasty or it was a terrible way to do it, it obviously worked. So there you go.
Yeah, well, people thought it did, which often came to the same thing anyway.
Mm.
And they must have had belief in it because, of course, they kept doing it. So, again, it comes back to this idea of folk belief, what people actually believe to be the case, regardless of what the official medicine might say.
That's right. Yeah,
continue to do it.
What about poultices, like for getting drawing out splinters? I've come across bread, putting a bread poultice on, and there's been several others.
Yeah, bread, I've come across that one. Can't think of any others at the moment. But,
I've got one for you, Graham. It was a nice...
I have, Rob. Lay it on me.
Cop this one.
For any boils or anything like that, it was soap and even cow manure in a pack.
And poultice, yeah.
And put it on.
So you have the cow manure.
Yeah.
No, it was
nearly fresh, you know.
So that one, like you'd have the cow manure, mix it up with soap.
Yeah, or something like that.
Yeah.
Hold it.
And then that would draw it.
Bread poultices and all sorts of things.
Mm.
Right. So we've got to find yourself a chook and a cow.
Yes, right. There's chook and a cow and everything will be well.
The other thing that comes to mind living in the central west of New South Wales, as I do, were the travelling people who would sell medications. There was the Rawley's man for one, and a lot of the old Indian hawkers were, or probably, as you say, basically snake oil sales.
Yeah, I think so, that they would be the place to get it. I mean, not every place had a pharmacy available or even a kind of a barber shop or something that might also knock out a few how to cure your ills pills. But, I think the hawker is a really important character in the bush in terms of this kind of thing and many other things as well during the 19th century and even well into the 20th century in some places.
Yes, that's right. And apart from everything else that they carried, like the haberdashery and that, from memory, a bit before my time, but from people I've spoken with, that they did sell a lot of these home remedies or medications as well.
Yeah, I think so. As I said, it was very much part of the way that business had to be done.
Here's one, a little bit of axle grease and lamp soot. So if you've got a rash, this is what you need.
If you've got a rash and things, and you get the soot from inside the lamp, and you get some axle grease and mix the soot up with it, and you put it on the eczema or whatever it is, and he said it helps it. Because what it did, it'll stop the sunburn. For a start and things. So that was another old cure. Say ginger, I remember carb soda and ginger for cramps in your tummy and things. And it worked. It really did.
And where would she have picked all these up?
I would say from her mother again.
Still that old tradition of things being handed down.
Yeah, usually through the women in the family often for these sorts of things, definitely. And again, coming back to that domestic sphere, which women in those days were expected to inhabit and stay in.
Yeah. What about the dreaded hangover, Graham? I'm sure that in your very moderate youth, you would have found something that cured a hangover.
Oh, yes, there's the usual greasy breakfast is still the popular favourite, I think, but there are some more exotic ones, like the raw eggs and Worcestershire sauce. one, if one, onto a better one. Prickly pear, apparently. Some people are using prickly pear. I don't know how they actually... did it. I suppose it would be extracted and boiled up probably in some kind of a tea, supposed to reduce your hangover by at least 50%. And eating ginger is another one that has been around. And again, this is one of the things that people or medical research is looking into as well as a potentially useful kind of treatment for nausea and so forth. So again, many of these sorts of old cures are coming into vogue again. Not the raw eggs and Worcestershire sauce, no. Not for me, anyway.
Not for you. And I think we haven't touched on the diarrhoea cures yet, I don't think, either, have we?
Let's have a look here. Diarrhoea. Well, lemonade and plain toast, I think, for gastric, which would be similar. Port wine and brandy. We talked about those, I think, didn't we?
Yeah. I've got a bit of a mystery. I mentioned earlier that we did a lot of recordings up on the Nulla, up around Kempsey Way. And also at Hill End, and the kids would collect corkwood and sell it to the chemists. Now, I could never find out what there was about corkwood bark. It was the bark off the corkwood tree. What it was about it. But there was a whisper that it was for social disease. I've just got a bit of a grab here about talking about collecting the corkwood.
Corkwood. And collecting it and selling it to the chemist. Yeah. Did you ever get involved in that?
Dooley used to do... He used to be into the corkwood gathering. They used to get some drug out of it. It was sent away.
It
was a big thing. They all lived on this property, and that's what they used to do, go out and cut this corkwood, and they'd bring it back to the house or the shed, and they used to bag it up in these, like, bales, and a truck would come every so often and take it away.
So there you go. If anyone knows what the bark off the corkwood tree was used for, when they took it away and boiled it up, please let us know.
Yes, please do. I said there's a note here which says no one knew why, but there was a whisper it was for a social disease.
Yes.
Yes, well, that's interesting to know. We'll need a medical consultant on our next show, I think, to give us the answer to the question.
Well, I'm sure we can arrange it, Graham.
Excellent. You've been listening to another episode in the Yarns of Oz podcast, written, produced and presented by Rob Willis and Graham Seal. You also heard the voices of Terry Casey, Mr. and Mrs. Bisbee, and Mari Snow. We'll see you later.